Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Marketing St. Louis. What can be done to sell this community and its image in the hope of attracting new business and residents, help keep those we already have, and foster community pride? They say nothing is quite so valuable as an idea whose time has come, and it doesn't always have to be a big idea. Our guests on today's program hope their ideas and ideas they hope to generate can help get the job done. It's all inspired by a blog post last year by St. Louis and Aaron Perlett. He is a partner in the St. Louis marketing firm Elasticity. His blog was titled, St. Louis Doesn't Suck. It got a lot of attention, after which he co-founded Rally St. Louis, which solicited grassroots ideas for boosting the city's image. Many ideas were forthcoming. Five have been selected and funded in a first round. Five additional projects have also been selected, with a funding campaign to begin for them tomorrow. Aaron Perlett joins me in studio. Joe Reagan, president and CEO of the RCGA, will join us by phone in just a couple of moments. And representatives of three of the first five projects selected will join us to explain their projects a little bit later. They are Tim Cooney. The project is Operation Blacktop. Tim Tucker's is Cotton Belt, Mississippi, Mondo Intervention. And Joe Ostafi's project is The Food Ruth. Again, we'll have details on these individual projects later. Aaron, let me begin with you. I think it would be important to explain to everybody who doesn't know exactly how Rally St. Louis is working.
Sure. It's a really, we hope, interesting endeavor in that after I wrote the Forbes piece, we saw there was this kind of palpable excitement to try to reframe the conversation about St. Louis, especially outside of our region, but as well as inside the region. I think a lot of people that live here and that have grown up here tend to take what we have for granted, just the quality of life. And so after I'd written that piece, my partner Brian Cross sent an email to me and some of my coworkers that said, you know, what if we were able to actually create a platform where people can suggest ideas and ultimately help to fund those ideas? And so we spent about a month kind of tweaking the concept and try to really flesh it out. And so what Rally has become is it's an online platform where anyone can go and suggest an idea as to how to either better improve the St. Louis region or to how to better market or position greater St. Louis. And those ideas are voted on. So what we're doing is kind of democratizing the process of ideas that might help frame the conversation about greater St. Louis. So they're voted on, and the most popular ideas each month are budgeted, which is where we are now. We spent the last month actually budgeting the first round of ideas that were voted up in December. And then once they're budgeted, they go out on the site for what's called crowdfunding. And crowdfunding means that no matter who you are and no matter what denomination of an investment you want to make in some type of project, if you're passionate about something and you want to give a dollar, you want to give $20, if you want to give $1 million, you can do that, and it's tax deductible. And within 90 days, if the projects aren't fully funded, you get your money back. You're not charged for it at all.
Is this only a grassroots funding operation? Do you have corporate involvement?
So we had some foundation, family, and corporate involvement to start the entity. We felt like we don't want this to be something that's one and done in a few months and disappears. We needed to create really an organization around it, build the web platform, which is pretty complex, and then also to budget marketing, because we want to keep this concept in front of St. Louisans for the next 3 years at least. So we raised money from some family foundations like the Kemper family, the Taylor family, St. Louis Economic Development Council, the County Economic Development Council, rather, Hardee's, Fuse Automotive, and some entities like that stepped up and made some economic investments in it. But from now on, as we start to fund these projects, it's really going to be up to citizens. And so we're not actively seeking to get corporate investment in a project or to get government investment in a project. Now, that's not to say that if a company sees a project and they fall in love with it and they feel like it aligns with their business goals and they want to make, say, a matching grant or something to that degree, we'll gladly accept it, and it'll be tax deductible for them as well because it's a 501c.
At this point, how much money are you working with?
So we raised, just to start the organization, we raised about $250,000. But we tomorrow, now that we're have these ideas budgeted, we actually start funding. So we haven't raised a dime yet for any specific project. and the projects are only going to be funded beginning tomorrow. This will be the kind of the first step in that process of crowdfunding.
Can we talk about some of the numbers with regard to what you're going to begin funding tomorrow?
Sure.
Again, I want to be sure that everyone is clear on this, and perhaps I misrepresented it in my introduction, but basically, tomorrow you're going to begin funding what, the next five projects or the ones that have already been determined?
The first five that were voted up in December, tomorrow they are open for funding. And so we actually there's five projects, and there will be five projects from each month. And in fact, we have five new projects now that we're going to spend the next month trying to put a budget to from voting in January. And sorry if this is getting a little confusing. but we're going to open up for the five projects that were voted up in December. One of them we have actually chosen. One of them is pretty complex. That was it's a great idea, and I never realized – I'm not a soccer guy. I'm not from St. Louis, and I don't think I recognize quite the passion around soccer. But one of the ideas was to bring the National Soccer Hall of Fame to St. Louis.
Back to St. Louis.
It was initially for the last up until 10 years ago, it was actually in New York. Mm-hmm. And for the last 10 years, the contents of the National Soccer Hall of Fame have been sitting in a storage container. Mm-hmm. And so the artifacts are there, and it's simply finding a facility and, you know, creating an organization that can actually manage this facility and building this thing out. But we feel like this is a little more complex than a lot of the projects that have been submitted to it. Fortunately, we've got a blues museum that's going in that gives us a great benchmark in terms of pricing, in terms of how much this endeavor might cost. But we still felt like we wanted to push it forward another month so we could get a very reasonable budget for it.
Maybe there's some room left at the old bowling hall of
fame. I think it's about to be flattened, actually.
Yeah, I think you're right. So the soccer ideas are not represented here by the folks we have in studio and will have in studio. And the other one is pickup soccer.
Yeah, pickup soccer. There was some interest in actually putting if you look at most of the soccer fields around town, most of them are not in the city's urban core. They're in more the suburban areas. And this concept was to put a pickup soccer field in the urban core, a turf field that could be lit, much like a pickup basketball court, an outdoor basketball court, that people could actually go and play soccer. Major League Soccer actually does grants to these things as well. So we've been looking at these prices, and the budget for the full soccer field, for a full-size field, would be $860,000. A medium-sized field would be $390,000, and then a smaller field would be $142,000.
Do you feel that $860,000 is realistic for your operation to raise that much?
I think it's highly unlikely. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that someone steps, some prominent family in town might step up and say, they love soccer and we'd love to see that here, mm-hmm. Or an organization might step up. I mentioned MLS does grants of up to they will actually do grants that, as long as the remainder of the funds is matched, they will make pretty sizable grants, I think of up to like $250,000. And specifically, they're looking to fund urban soccer fields to bring back soccer in America's cities. So it is, I think, feasible, but I still think more than likely, if we were able to fund something like this, it's going to be the smaller number, $142,000, which I don't think is unreasonable. When we looked at the projects, we felt like it is going to be the smaller ticket projects that get funded, that we're able to actually fund through crowdfunding, through citizen donations. And we have some smaller ones that I think are extremely achievable.
How is this? I get it with the Soccer Hall of Fame Museum, whatever we want to call it. But how is a small soccer field going to boost the city's image?
I think that if I put it in the context of the way that we used to market the city, and that is we were always looking for that one big whale, instead of taking kind of the aggregate of the sum of the parts that we have, I don't think any one of these projects is going to change the perception of our city. I think that a collection of different things that are going on in the greater St. Louis region are going to ultimately help boost not only the perception outside of St. Louis, but the way that people feel about St. Louis who live here and that have grown up here, to see it as I'd say an example of progress and things that are being different, that are being done differently and from a grassroots perspective that are started by people, any people. You could be a housewife from St. Charles or you could be a corporate CEO downtown. It doesn't matter.
How many ideas did you get in this first thrust of yours once you got the ball rolling?
About 300. But we continue to get, and that's one thing we've been trying to clarify, you can still continue to submit ideas. And every month, 5 new ideas will go through, you know, begin the budgeting process. So, which means that every month we'll have budgets and be announcing, you know, dollar sums for 5 new ideas.
Over 3 years or so, you say?
Well, it would be great if this thing just continues to go in perpetuity.
Yeah. By the way, we have a link to your website on our website, stlpublicradio.org, so folks can get more information that way, with a little more information on some of the projects that we're talking about. Let's go back to the beginning and what you saw or didn't see that caused you to write the blog piece, St. Louis Doesn't Suck, and get you going on this?
You know, I think it was a number of things. My wife and I have moved around a lot. I'm from Virginia. I've lived everywhere from 2 stops in Florida to New Orleans to North Carolina. And I have always been incredibly impressed with the quality of life here since we moved here 7.5 years ago. The aspects that my wife and I enjoy, that our children enjoy, everything from our cultural institutions, which I think are, you know, it amazes me how this town does not have a reputation for having outstanding cultural institutions. We have an incredible number for a town of this size, to the quality of some of the public education districts around the region, to our universities, to just things like traffic and the number of Fortune 1000 companies. All the different aspects that make, you know, a good quality of life that a family or an individual might be looking for. And I think I was frustrated with this kind of chip on the shoulder that I see from lifelong St. Louisans, how there's a sense that it's a second-class city when it's really not, as well as when I would talk to people outside of St. Louis and tell them about it. It wasn't that they had a bad impression or a good impression. They really had no impression. They didn't know what to make of St. Louis. And, you know, I had seen from the inside out our efforts at kind of marketing the city and kind of what I perceived to be a real lack of collaboration in doing so from a very broad base. And then I think the tipping point for me were there's some ridiculous articles that came out last fall. I think we were one of the top 10 most depressed cities based on use of antidepressants. Wall Street 24/7 called St. Louis one of the top 10 most mismanaged cities. And there was a really funny piece in The Onion about, you know, government creates 4,000 new jobs. Bad news is they're in St. Louis. And so finally, it was more out of frustration. There was no kind of strategic insight that I was thinking, aha, this will come from this if I write this piece.
When you recite things like that, it's easy to understand why some people around here think we have an inferiority complex. We have to take a break now. We'll do that. You've been listening to Aaron Perlett of Rally St. Louis. His organization is trying something quite different for this community, and that is to market the city in a different way, to boost our image and to make us feel a lot better about ourselves and make people outside of the city feel a lot better about St. Louis, too. We'll come back and continue our conversation and a couple of the projects that are being funded to accomplish the objectives I've just been talking about will be up for discussion too when we come back. So stay with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the project founded by Rally St. Louis. The whole idea is to accumulate grassroots ideas for marketing, selling this city, and boosting the city's image and making us and other people feel good about ourselves. With me in studio is Aaron Perlett. He is the co-founder of Rally St. Louis. And joining us in studio right now is Tim Tucker of the Cotton Belt Mississippi Mondo Intervention Project, which is one of those that is being funded as a part of the first round of this whole project. And Joe Ostafi's project is the Food Roof. He is also with me in studio. Tim, let me begin with you. Tell us what you're up to with that big-named project of yours.
Oh, it's a fascinating project, and we'd like to thank Rally St. Louis for the opportunity to participate here and that we've been given. One of the great things is my business partner and I, Mark Schulte, were talking, and we said, you know, what can we do with this building? You know, it's a great building.
Well, building and where?
It's the Cotton Belt building located in between Dixon Street and Florida Street, just north of Laclede's Landing. And it's in a very attractive area.
Where the new bridge is being built.
Actually, just a little bit south of it. So it's highly visible. And we were talking about what we could put on the outside of the building. And due to our good fortune, Mark had a good friend by the name of Tom Nangle, who's considerably younger than both Mark and I, who was familiar with social media and was able to introduce this concept to Rally St. Louis. And we believe we were successful in obtaining something like 1,799 votes. And what Tom had proposed was to actually put a mural on the outside of the building that welcomes people as they come in over the bridge from Illinois into St. Louis. Mark and I had discussed both mural concepts, and we had also been working with a group called the Creative Exchange Lab that had proposed some technical applications to the building as well, dealing with light structures and things that would change over time and projections and things like that. So we're in the process of trying to figure out exactly what it is that we're going to put on the outside of the building, and that'll be contingent upon the amount of money that we ultimately raise for our concepts.
I was under the impression that what it was going to be was something like a welcome sign.
It could be that, and that's what we'd like to do, is something that, you know, encourages, puts a favorable face on the city of St. Louis, you know, because it is one of the primary front doors into the city. And, you know, if you don't have a lot of money, you know, and you want to spend your money where it's going to be seen. And what we would like to do ultimately with this project is encourage the City Arch River Group and Great Rivers Greenway to take a more comprehensive look at the riverfront and plan, you know, riverfront improvements from the arch grounds up to the entrance to the riverfront trail.
Would this mural be permanent, or would it – I mean, the location would be – or would it change? Would the artwork change?
As Robert Fishbone said in his comments, it's pretty complex, you know, because we're dealing with a structure that's on the National Register. We're dealing with its potential renovation over time. And you look at things like Don Breckinridge's, Richard Haas mural on the Edison Brothers warehouse building, which is now the Sheraton Hotel. You know, that painting was able to accommodate the ultimate development of that building. So we'll take all of that into account, you know, and so right now we're not entirely sure what it's going to be or how big it's going to be. And again, it'll be contingent upon the resources that we're capable of attracting for the project.
Well, I have a figure in front of me, Aaron, of $21,000.
Yeah, we actually worked with Tim and his team in trying to, you know, set a reasonable number that they felt would take into account all the materials. And I think it's principally looking at kind of a volunteer workforce that would and volunteer artists that would help to actually put it together. So it's more for the supplies, things like scaffolding and paint.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what we wanted to do is encourage the artistic community to submit, you know, ideas on what it is that they, you know, and we'll select from those ideas, you know, something that would, the image that would ultimately go on the building.
This idea of artwork, Aaron, is one that seems to be catching on. I see in future projects, one of the things I see is recreating Lindy Squared, which some of the people who have been around for a little bit longer might remember, but that's perhaps in the works for the next round.
Yeah, it's actually one of the ones that was voted up for the month of January, and you know, it is fascinating to see that a lot of the ideas have been related to public art. And the thing is that, you know, when I look at the ideas and what I had imagined that would be the kind of things that would be submitted, they're not anywhere near what I thought would be submitted. And that's great, because honestly, this has absolutely nothing to do with what I think, what my partner Brian Cross thinks, or, you know, we have a pretty sizable team that's helping to manage Rally. It's about democratizing this process and getting a large group of people to give ideas and then vote in those ideas. And that's what really counts, because then you have a kind of a much broader consensus to base how we're kind of framing what makes St. Louis great. And again, it doesn't have to be one big thing. We're all about a collection of kind of dynamic, different resources that you know, create our cultural fabric here.
Kind of a mosaic.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go to Joe Ostafi now and talk about something else that's dear to our hearts, artwork being one of them, but food may even take precedence over that. Tell us about your project, which is the Food Roof.
Sure. Thanks, Don. Actually, my wife, Mary, and I moved here to St. Louis about 3 years ago, and in downtown in particular. And one thing that became readily apparent to us in our lifestyle in urban living is there was something missing. And for us, we felt like that was a connection back to the earth. Living in a dense urban environment has a lot of benefits, but one of the drawbacks was the ability for residents to sort of get their hands dirty, find a platform that engages their neighbors and their community. And we thought agriculture was, you know, maybe a great place to start doing that. And so we started a community garden downtown. In fact, the first community garden a couple of years ago through our nonprofit Urban Harvest STL. And we were just taken back, excuse me, by the enthusiasm surrounding that and the sort of pent-up demand for people to engage with their neighbors and colleagues around food. And so the community garden was created, and in doing that and going through that sort of enterprise, we looked all around us, and it took us like a year to find a site in central downtown close to where people are and restaurants are and education is and the needy are. But we finally found one, but it was sort of a long-term lease. There was a corporation downtown that had a little extra land, gave us the opportunity to build a garden. We built it. We brought in 30 residents together. We created a long waiting list, but, you know, looking ahead for Urban Harvest STL, we needed to find the sort of next platform to take it to the next level, to gain more exposure, to bring people together in sort of a different way, and to find a site in central downtown that, you know, had a longer-term platform and support for us. So that's when we started literally looking up and talking to some building owners who saw, you know, the environmental benefits to their own buildings. We saw the ability to bring our passion around food, education, and innovation, combine that with city buildings, and, you know, looked at things like the City Museum and the success of that, and came up with the idea of the food roof.
So it's an idea yet. You've got a site selected, as I understand it, but no earth has been turned, if you'll pardon the expression, on the roof.
Correct. And that's where Rally St. Louis really came into play, and we applaud Aaron and Brian. The timing was perfect. We've been thinking about the food roof for over a year. In fact, we were just getting ready literally to launch our own fundraising public campaign. And then we heard about Rally STL and said, well, this is perfect. This brings together so many of the audience members we want to participate, and brings together you know, the enterprises of downtown and the philanthropy of downtown. And
how large this first one, if it goes beyond one, how large would it actually be?
We're looking at about a 10,000 square foot rooftop in central downtown.
That's a fair amount of space.
It is.
Yeah, Aaron, let me go back to you again with the funding. I noticed there are several different numbers here, and I think this is pretty clever of you guys, is to weigh various possibilities. I mean, you know, various options that you might have depending on how much is raised.
Exactly. We've been talking to Joe and Mary for the last month about this, and we didn't want to have a kind of a take it or leave it option. We wanted to be able to basically have some tiered options, so that even if we could only raise half the money, I mean, it's such a, you know, fascinating idea, and it's actually a trend that's been going on nationally, and it's nice to see it come to St. Louis, and it'd be great to see that if it could actually start a trend within the city and actually, you know, take root here with Joe and Mary's project, and to see it replicated. But yeah, so we've got three different levels. The first level, to have half of a rooftop farm, would be $25,000, and then the second level would be $35,000. That'd be half a rooftop farm plus a chicken coop with chickens.
The chicken coop is not worth anything if you don't have the chickens.
Exactly. And it's not as delicious either. $45,000 would be half the rooftop farm plus, and I think this is a really important aspect of it, outdoor education program and a shaded community gathering space. And then, you know, for the entire project would be about $65,000 for full fundraising. So yeah, we are hoping it would be great if we can actually raise the money for the full project. But again, we didn't want to have kind of a take it or leave it aspect to it.
We're starting to get some response from our audience, and we have a tweet from Tara who is asking, are we to understand that Rally St. Louis budgeted for marketing but not to pay the artist of such a massive project? Please ask why. I guess that question might be directed at you.
As part of our design thing, what we would like to do is direct people to our website, and we'll have some information there that will encourage people to submit ideas, and we would like to have resources available to pay the artists.
And I think it's important. You know, Tara brings up a good point. So we weren't this we're trying to create a movement, and a movement that is really seeded by people and ultimately funded by people. And we're not trying to bring in any kind of intervention by outside entities and organizations and looking for government dollars. But, you know, the projects themselves, we're trying to make this self-sustaining, quite frankly. And so we want the projects themselves to pay for themselves. And so, you know, as I mentioned before, a lot of these ideas of the 300 ideas have been arts-related. And many of them, involve sculpture and other things like that, and are going to be ultimately budgeted to somehow compensate those that are putting in their time and effort to it. So I think it just depends on the project as well. I think, you know, initially Tim's concept was to try and have a volunteer group that was interested in creating this doorway into St. Louis. But I think that, again, each project is going to be different. What we're trying to do with Rally is create a vehicle for these things to happen and essentially get out of the way. We're trying to let for lack of a better analogy, let the inmates run the asylum.
Is this going on anyplace else in the country?
This is actually the first of its kind. What we've done is we've taken two different kinds of concepts. There is the ideation of it is crowdsourcing. So, and you see that with different consumer brands. Starbucks has done it. They have a thing called My Starbucks Idea where you can submit an idea for a new product. And then sometimes they'll actually use them in store. And then crowdfunding, there's sites like Kickstarter where you've seen, and that's probably the most popular of them, where people are raising funds for new products, for films and things like that. But no one has never kind of brought these two concepts together, and they certainly have never done it in an effort to kind of create a regional marketing vehicle.
Yeah, we have another email here that I'd like to read to you. Who are you trying to sell this place to? Are you trying to get more people from Illinois to come over here? Because I think a lot of them don't much care to come to St. Louis on account there isn't much to be done once you get here.
I would beg to differ on not being allowed to do once you get here. Again, a really good point, though. So I think we have a number of issues. If you talk to corporate recruiters around town, they will tell you that one of the biggest challenges they face is when they are trying to recruit top-tier talent, that the people who are there recruiting will go to Google and they will type in St. Louis, and things like high crime or poor public education will come up. We are trying to kind of change those perceptions for people that are interested in moving here to work for a company. For college students, people who are graduating from schools, whether you're at Stanford or MIT or the University of Miami or University of Vermont or what have you, a lot of college students graduate school and they drop a finger on a map and they say, I'm going to move here. Why not? So I think we're trying to change kind of the broader perception, both from an economic development standpoint, recruiting standpoint, tourism standpoint, just the overall perception of the region.
You know, a lot of college students here put their finger on the map so they can get out. I mean, that's one of the things you're trying to change as well. We want to keep the brain power here.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the ideas we're going to be talking about a little later was actually submitted by a WashU student who grew up here. And it's fantastic to have students. I mean, we've got some great university years from UMSL to SLU to WashU. It's to keep these kids here is ideal because, you know, I know there's a group in town called Brain Drain Code trying to keep smart people here.
Yeah. Let's take a couple of quick calls as time will allow us. We'll begin with Mike calling from University City. He's been waiting a long time. Go ahead, Mike. Mike, are you there?
First of all, I wanted to say that it sounds like a really great project. My question really relates to the geographic area or boundaries that your projects are being considered for. And it sounds like it's right now it's just St. Louis City, so it would be the city boundary lines. If this is successful, would it be possible or whatever to consider, and you've mentioned the universities outside, some of them outside of the St. Louis city limits, but would it be possible to expand this to the metropolitan area, St. Louis County maybe, or even the metropolitan area as an area to draw people into?
Yeah, we have another question. I won't take it because it's repetitive, saying St. Louis doesn't stop at Skinker. It's a region.
No, two very valid questions. Actually, when we started thinking about this, it was more O'Fallon to O'Fallon. It was not just St. Louis City. We have found a lot of the ideas that have been submitted thus far to be very, I'd say, urban-centric and very focused on St. Louis City. But not only, but we want this to be something for the entire region because, quite frankly, you know, I think sometimes we get lost in drawing these boundaries and kind of turf wars, when the reality is that if a company moves to, say, St. Louis City, its employees might be living in the city, they might be living in the county, they might be living in Illinois, and so we all benefit from it. So Mike, and to the other person who had the question, I know we're very focused on the greater St. Louis region, and ultimately the power in this lies in the popularity of the idea, so that if it's voted up, it's voted up. We have no control over it.
We're going to take one more quick call before we have to move on, and this will be Jerry in O'Fallon. Jerry, make it a quick question or comment, please.
Yes, I represent the Western O'Fallon, and as you and your listeners know, I don't have any trouble blowing my horn. I think it's a great idea. I've had the opportunity to travel really all over the country and other places in the world. There's so many attributes here, and I think it's a very good way to go about it. Most of the mistakes that I think have been made in the region have been made by the people who ran it. I can't think of the business group that Civic Progress that simply represent their own interests. And what I really think is once you make a city that people want to, a region that people want to move to or live in, is how you really get economic development, because the companies will follow the smart people. You know, biking paths, I mean, a lot of progressive ideas, I think, are really what make cities that, you know, people say, I want to move to Seattle, I want to move to Portland.
Jerry, let me stop you there. I've got the point, and I've got to take a break, but let's get a quick response from the folks here.
Well, I would say that I think you bring up an interesting point about kind of the typical manner in which we have marketed the region. When we first came up with this concept back in January a year ago, we spent about 6 months socializing this idea with everyone from Civic Progress to the RCGA, now the St. Louis Chamber, to Mark Kern in St. Clair County, Illinois, to nonprofits, business leaders, Walter Metcalf, who's leading the Arch Charge, and to a person. Every entity, organization we talked to, even if it was a CVC or RCGA that has responsibility for recruiting people here, said they love this idea and they want to see it flourish. And so Tom Irwin, who leads Civic Progress, Joe Reagan, who leads the RCGA, Kitty Ratcliffe, who leads CVC, the organizations that have helped define our region have been incredibly supportive. In fact, have been providing us counsel as board members to this project all along.
I want to pick up on that. I do have to take a break, and we're going to say goodbye to our two other guests, Joe Ostafi. His project is Food Roof. Best of luck to you with that. It sounds like an intriguing idea, and we'll look forward to looking up and seeing what we see.
Right.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks for having us.
And very much, Tim Tucker, again, thanks to you, and we'll look forward to that big sign down by the brand-new bridge.
Thanks, Don. Come
Best
to the
luck.
River.
Come to the river. Come on and stay a while. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us. We'll bring in another guest in just a moment. Aaron Perlett of Rally St. Louis, which is behind all of the things we're talking about, is staying with me here in studio. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation about Rally St. Louis Project. It's an image-boosting campaign, if you will, a marketing campaign to make this city a more attractive place for those of us who live here and those of us we like to bring into St. Louis, whether there is tourists or businesses or whatever. Aaron Perlett of Rally St. Louis is with me in studio. Just joining us now is Tim Cooney. His project is Operation Blacktop. We're going to talk about that in a moment. He's one of those that has been funded during the first wave of projects that Rally St. Louis has sponsored. But joining us by phone is Joe Reagan, who is the CEO and president of the Regional Chamber and Growth Association. Joe, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, Don. Great to be here.
Well, you know, I know you're a member of the board of Rally St. Louis, and Aaron has been telling me how supportive you are. What attracted you to this particular project?
Sure. Well, I met Aaron very quickly on a job during my listening tour, and what I loved about his and Brian's ideas for Rally St. Louis is that it filled a critical need for us. And Don, you and I have talked about this before. We have a brand which is amazing, St. Louis, and we have an icon in the Arch that is amazing. But we can do a better job as citizens to sell that brand, to tell the story of the brand in our own unique way. When we sit down on that Southwest plane going someplace, somebody says, where are you from? We say, St. Louis. What comes out of our mouth? Hopefully we're going to be able to be excited and inspired enough to say, yeah, I'm from St. Louis. Hey, yeah, I would love it there. Let me tell you about the park, or let me tell you about Wash U, or let me tell you about whatever it is that inspires you about St. Louis. we need to do a better job of that. As we have this Midwest sensibility that kind of gets us to hang back. We're hard on ourselves. I'm not being Pollyannish here. I'm not saying there aren't challenges ahead of us. But, you know, quite frankly, we've got a lot to talk about, and we need to rally around those things that are moving. And the thing that I loved about the idea, too, is that it's about product development. So we have this great brand. We can tell that story, but we can also have ideas for how do we get better? How do we have continuous improvement? How are we adding, getting folks to pitch in organic grassroots ideas that drives the Kaizen, the continuous improvement of the community, which is so critical to being a great place where we can work together to make it a more attractive place for people to live, work, and invest.
Joe, you're a relative newcomer to this community. Have you found in a little more than a year or so, I guess, that you've been here, have you found that people here have difficulty selling themselves and I referred to it earlier as something of an inferiority complex?
Well, absolutely. Look, I'm a year on the job tomorrow is my first year anniversary. And when I went out on a listening tour meeting with over 300 individuals, and I thought I would ask them, what inspires you about St. Louis? So often people would start with the deficiencies of St. Louis. I don't think we have as much of an inferiority complex as I think we, two things, again, this Midwest humility, which is endearing and authentic and is part of the things we should talk about. But second is, we're just hard on ourselves. You know, we want to be better. We try, kind of tend to look at where what's missing. And I don't think that's all bad. But, you know, we should be swaggering a little bit more. Give you one thought. Education attainment is our number one policy issue. When we look at the percent of the population with a bachelor's degree or higher, we are 14th among metropolitan areas in this country. We're 19th in population, 14th in that statistic. We want to be in the top 10. So we want to close that gap. We aren't satisfied with 14th. But how many of us would really have known or thought, wow, we're at 14th? How many of us celebrate the fact that we're one of the most vibrant university towns in America right now, college towns in America? So I think we just don't have the habit of that swagger that places like Austin and Atlanta and others who are doing great, and we are too, but just have a better
you know,
look, they swagger a little bit more.
You know, obviously the various projects that we've been talking about and those that are to come are going to need some to cash to realize what they want to do. And I recognize the fact that this is a grassroots campaign, but you have your finger on the pulse of the business community. What role can the business community play in helping to fund some of the projects we've been talking about?
Our business community here, hands down, is the most generous business community in America. We, you know, this business community, the funding for ideas in this community is a real strength. The issue is not so, you know, part of it, what Rally St. Louis has done is make the connections and the network more inclusive and faster from a crowdsourcing, crowdfunding standpoint. But good ideas get funding in this town. And there are people that back ideas and try to see what works. The thing that I think the business community here is excited about is we share what's happening on these projects. So it isn't one of the things that Rally has done, and Aaron just alluded to it in his answer just a minute ago. He didn't, you know, Rally hasn't done this as a silo. They went out and socialized what they wanted to do. They invited people in. We're all working together on this platform in this movement. But they didn't try to, you know, set up another silo, another bucket that was separate. They said, come on in, help us, and we'll help you. And that's good. That's my favorite idea about Rally St. Louis is the idea itself, is that we can do things without creating a separate, putting up walls. We can actually have those connections better. So all right, all the ideas going to get funded off the ground? I don't know. But I do know that this town is the business community, the private sector, and individuals are amazingly generous, and they've backed ideas to get off the ground before. I think when they're presented with interesting ideas, they'll take a little risk and get it moving.
Well,
what happened with the arts grants, for instance, amazing success story.
Well, there have been a number of projects already brought forth, as you well know, and we'll be most interested in seeing how they are funded and how they proceed. Joe Ragan, thank you so much for being with us, taking time to be with us. That's Joe Ragan, President and CEO of the Regional Chamber and Growth Association. Now to our new guest into the studio, Tim Cooney. We're talking about his project that is being funded through this Rally St. Louis project. Tim Cooney's project is called Operation Blacktop. Tim, thanks for being with us. What's that all about?
Thanks for having me. Project Blacktop is an idea to take empty lots in the city of St. Louis and transform them into something useful and attractive, too. There's plenty of empty lots in the city. You see them driving down every road when you're in St. Louis. And my idea is simply to take them and transform into basketball courts, maybe a miniature park around the basketball court, and go a little bit beyond that and also pair youth organizations, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Herbert Hoover, Boys and Girls Clubs with them, and have their communities come to the basketball courts and use them.
Why basketball courts and not baseball diamonds or soccer fields or what have you?
Well, for me, I've been playing basketball my whole life. I'm on the team at WashU here in St. Louis, and it's my passion. I realize there's other people in St. Louis that love baseball, they love soccer, but for me, it's been basketball.
This is, and I don't want to put a pejorative spin on this, but this is one of the really low-budget items on your list, Aaron.
It really is. I think we priced it out at about $15,000 for a full court and about $10,000 for a half court. We've already been talking to the city. One of the people I failed to mention who's been incredibly supportive of this initiative has been Mayor Slay. Mayor Slay has been incredibly supportive, and so we've been working with his staff to actually try to identify both city-owned and privately owned lots that possibly, if this is able to be funded, that we could do this first project on if it's able to, especially because this is one of the low-budget projects. I also think Tim's submission in particular also says two things to me as well. It's one, if you look at the diversity of the five that are funded, from a food roof to basketball court to soccer to a mural on a giant building, you have a great diversity of ideas there. Again, represented that mosaic as you mentioned before, and then also we talked about the brain drain. And Tim went to high school here. He goes to WashU, and I'm hoping he's planning on staying here, although we haven't talked about that at all. But it is great to see him taking an active interest in making this community where he grew up better through this vehicle that we've created. It's simply a platform, and he's kind of taking control of that.
Tim, it occurs to me in looking at this project and looking at you and just chatting with you that this is more than just giving kids a place to play basketball. You see other advantages to this.
Yeah, honestly, I think, the real reason I thought of it was I was in Milwaukee this summer with my brother. I lived there for a few weeks, and we enjoy playing basketball together. And looking out in Milwaukee, there's a lot of courts, a lot of active young people around playing. And I think aside from just kids playing basketball, I think it's a great thing for young college kids or young adults who have jobs to go out on a summer night and go play basketball, just to get the city active, to see people on a street corner playing basketball with lights at night.
And keeping out of trouble. I mean, it gives them something else to do, perhaps, than to get into trouble.
Definitely. Yeah. I think part of making St. Louis, the whole Rally St. Louis thing, is just being more active and having people out in the city, seeing people walking on the street, seeing people doing things in the community. And I think Project Blacktop gives people an opportunity to do that.
Right. Well, it sounds like a good one. Again, we'll see and see if Joe Ragan is right with regard to the funding for this sort of thing. Do you feel, Aaron, that you're stepping on anybody's toes? You mentioned the CVC and RCGA, of course. But they do this sort of thing or are supposed to do this sort of thing.
They do. And honestly, that was when we first concepted this idea, Brian Cross and I went and talked to a number of business leaders, and we said, what do you think of this idea? And they said, you could potentially be stepping on some organizations' toes, and you should go talk with those organizations and get a read on their feedback. And that's, was great when we met people like Joe and Steve Johnson, who works for RCGA as well as Kitty Radcliffe and Brian Hall that work for the CVC. And I got to tell you, those four people in particular were incredibly supportive of this. And the thing is that we're not looking to replace what they do.
We're looking at this to augment what they do, to provide yet another vehicle to kind of trumpet what makes St. Louis a great place to live, work, and play. And I think what we're also trying to do is really kind of create a vehicle that citizens can complete these projects that they're passionate about. So it's not really about what, the CVC is doing, but it's about, a student like Tim who has a passion for seeing an urban basketball court go up. And this provides the framework for him to actually accomplish something like that.
It gives the community both a top-down and a bottom-up approach.
Exactly.
To this sort of thing. In the time that's left, I want to give folks some sense of what the next five ideas are
sure.
that you've got lined up.
Sure.
And we've got a couple of minutes to talk about that. Lighten Up St. Louis is the first one I see. What's that all about?
Yeah, it's basically, if you look at most of the street lighting around town, it's called, my understanding is, Cobra Head Lighting. And it's really more so meant for traffic lighting, and mm-hmm. it's not meant for sidewalk facing pedestrian lights. And so it's apparently a very cost sensitive initiative that would help replace some of the current lighting and add an extension that would make essentially bring greater safety to some of our streets.
So this and the others we'll be mentioning will be put forth tomorrow. Is that the idea for open for funding?
Actually, so the first five we talked about, the food roof, Cotton Belt building, the Project Blacktop, and the pickup soccer field, beginning tomorrow, February 1st, people can actually start donating to those projects.
Okay.
The next five that you and I are going to talk about, including the Lighten Up St. Louis, we have a marketing and budgeting committee that's going to spend the next month actually okay. working with the submitters and putting a budget to these.
I've got that. So we already talked about recreating the Lindy Squared yep. Mural. So let's move on because time is starting to get away. The next one I have here is St. Louis Moving.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. I had mentioned a lot of these ideas were not what I was expecting. This is actually one that I thought was expecting. It's a marketing-focused idea to take miniaturized 3D St. Louis landmarks and actually bring them to other cities as a marketing vehicle, more of a kind of a guerrilla marketing vehicle to remind people that are walking around other urban areas that, hey, don't forget about St. Louis.
Okay, we have 2 minutes left. The next one, I'm not going to try to pronounce it because I probably wouldn't do it
correctly.
I think
it's Mushmouse.
Mushmouse. That's what I would have thought, but who knows.
Art space, 7,500 square foot art space down on Cherokee, and they are actually looking to fund an artist residency program.
And the automated bike sharing stations.
Yeah, something you see in European cities and in Shanghai and Chicago, basically automatic bike sharing stations where residents could actually they could rent and return bikes around town and just simply ride around town. It's a very automated system that kind of self-perpetuating, so it doesn't need to be monitored constantly. But, one of those neat little niches that it kind of says, here's something a little cool and different.
I'm sure there are people sitting next to their radios and or holding their phones in their hands or iPads or whatever saying, gee, I have some ideas. I'd like to get in on this. Yeah. What can I do?
It's very simple. You go to rallystl.org and you can upload an idea. You can vote for ideas that are already there. And beginning tomorrow, you'll be able to, if you're passionate about one of the first four ideas, you'll be able to make a contribution to it, which, again, is tax deductible. These ideas have 90 days to be funded. And if it's not fully funded in 90 days, you will not be charged because you use your credit card. You will not be charged at all.
Okay. I'll point out that we have a link to your Rally St. Louis website on our website, stlpublicradio.org, where folks can get more information about what we've been talking about for the last hour. Aaron Perlett, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on what you're doing. It sounds like a really, really neat project.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having us in.
Tim, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank
Tim
you.
Cooney has one of the projects that is being funded or will be funded and bring some basketball to some of the far corners of the city of St. Louis.
Scoop it up,
baby. We
will.
Thank you so much, both of you. And I thank the other members, too, who have been with us, Joe Reagan, Tim Tucker, and Joe Ostafi. We'll ask you to join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, and he'll talk with cast members from the production, that is, of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical at the Fox, and with graphic artist and blogger Bione Gomez Palacio. Also, Aaron Williams will take a look at the Hands-on Black History Museum's exhibition of vintage photos. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with representatives from the Federal Reserve Bank about the aftermath of the financial crisis and lessons that have been learned from it. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Spencer Reed, and Drew Becker. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.